Now, there were two ways iron was processed in the 1850s and 60s. To make iron, you need to remove impurities like sulfur and silicon from the ore. You do that by heating it. One method involves smelting iron, basically just making it soft enough to work with. With this method, locals could mine and work iron found on their own property or nearby. All that it required was a lot of trees to make charcoal to heat the forge and water power. And around here, Putnam Creek offered that. The moving water powered a wheel that turned a giant hammer that literally hammered the impurities out of smelted iron. The forge, basically a large oven, could heat the iron into a more malleable, spongy state called a bloom. Around here, these forges were sometimes called bloomery forges. Within the bloom were non-iron unwanted bits called slag, and that's where the water wheel came in, to power a large trip hammer that pounded off the slag from the iron. And there you have it, wrought iron. The blacksmith would take it from there to create nails, chains, horseshoes, ornamental workings, and even very early railroads. Throughout the 19th century, the type of forge most commonly used in this region was called a Catalan forge. The second method of processing iron required melting it into a liquid. Now, iron melting was an update in technology that came to the area in the mid-19th century. It required a different kind of furnace, a blast furnace, because it had to get a lot hotter. As the iron melts, it becomes what is known as cast iron, like my mother's pancake griddle. Blasts of air were pumped into the furnace, controlling the temperature of the charcoal. The liquid iron would run out the bottom of the furnace into a sand trough to feed a number of smaller troughs perpendicular to it. This configuration resembled a sow with a litter of suckling piglets. That's the origin of the name, pig iron. The hardened product could be transported, remelted, and then molded into whatever shape of cast iron was needed. The high heat of the blast furnace also removed the slag from the iron ore, but it required a much larger oven and much more charcoal, though it did produce much larger quantities of iron. Here's an account from historian E. Eugene Barker. It describes the day that the landowner, businessman, and Crown Point town father, Charles Hammond, met up with Jonas Tower. Tower had developed impressive credentials as a blast furnace builder and superintendent. Jonas Tower knew all things related to iron, and Charles Hammond was in high spirits as he rode down the dusty village street to the dock one fine morning in the autumn of 1844. Today would mark the beginning of a new epoch in his fortunes, he felt, and for the future of the Crown Point Iron Company.
Ah! Steamboat already in sight. Paddle wheels churning. She'll reach the dock any minute now. Perfect timing. Hello, Mr. Tower. Hurry this way down the plank. How are you this fine morning?
Happy to get out of the city.
Put your carpet bag in here under the seat of my buckboard. We're going to make a day of it. We'll pick up my brother-in-law, Alan Penfield, when we get to Irondale. The place Penfield and I are going to show you where we think the furnace might well be built is only 3 miles beyond Penfield's. The mines, if we have time to see them, are a mile or two further.
Yes, of course. I'd like to see it all.
I want to show you a place I have in mind. It combines several advantages. It's about 1 mile this side of the mine, and there is a downgrade hall for the ore all the way. I have bought a likely-looking ledge of lime rock about a mile in the other direction. It looks to be pure crystalline limestone.
It seems to me the logical place for a furnace is midway between the mine and the quarry.
It would not be a difficult lift to draw the pig iron up out of the hollow. From there to the lake is 9 miles, all downhill. Mr. Tower?
Please, call me Jonas.
Jonas, how many tons of ore will it take to make 1 ton of pig iron?
About 2 tons of ore to 1 ton of pig iron, depending on the richness of the ore. And it usually takes about 300 to 330 bushels of charcoal to make 1 ton of iron. And I reckon a furnace with the capacity you intend to build will require 650,000 bushels of charcoal a year to keep going at full blast.
Goodness gracious, think of that. I can't imagine it all in one big pile. It will take thousands of acres of forest to supply wood to make that amount of charcoal.
It certainly will.
Well, there's little but trees on our lands. Enough to feed our furnace and 10 like it, I guess. It's well to have it cleared off and free the land for use.
Well, you certainly have a water supply and power. That's a steep fall and rapids.
We're following the gorge of Putnam's Creek. There's almost every kind of mill along this stream. Grist mills, sawmills, tanneries, cabinet shops, and yes, woolen and carding factories.
At last, they had made it to the top of the hill and were approaching Penfield's ironworks. The village street was lined with neat cottages, a church, parsonage, a schoolhouse, and the two big houses of the proprietors. This was the town known as Ironville, and is now the site of the Penfield Museum, whose collection is definitely worth seeing.